Welcome to Declarations of War Podcast. This is episode 37. Thanks for tuning in. Hosts this time around are Alexei Picard, Ninja Turtle, and Yo. Pinky Feldman.
Hey.
First off, I'd like to give a shout out to Virgin Destroyer 7, probably the best name for an FPS game girl you could possibly hope for. She's going to be playing Dust when it comes out. She's possibly the best gamer girl you could hope for, and possibly the best girl in general. Because what I'm trying to say is she's pretty cool.
have you asked her out yet?
Oh, let's not kiss and tell.
I just love that name. That name is amazing.
Isn't it though? Especially for FPS. Because you know those guys haven't been outside of their mother's basement in years.
I know I haven't. Wait, what?
Hey guys, Turtle here, and I have the deal of a lifetime for you. For a very, very low price, which I haven't decided yet, I'm willing to sell my shout-out. I think it's a great plan, and contact me with any offers you may have.
Really, bribery couldn't get any easier. He doesn't even have a minimum price made up yet. Just give me your best offer.
Your offer will probably depend on your level of stupidity, and I plan accordingly.
This is Pinky, and I guess my shout-outs go out to all my friends and brothers-in-arms in the Mar Faction Warfare scene, specifically Arena Condor, Fwedit, Greygal, and Roygon of Agony, and then, of course, Almighty and Shaylee Leanne of Imperial Outlaws. I mean, and actually even Durherdur, you get a shout-out.
All right. Now, first up, we have a couple poll results worth discussing. From the Selene episode, Mercenary Coalition or Pandemic Legion? That was the question. 37 people weighed in. Mercenary Coalition with 84% of the vote. Pandemic Legion just 16%. Total of 6 peoples.
And those were probably mostly our alts, to be fair.
And, you know, I can see it. PL is amazing, but Mercenary Coalition was something special. Probably one of those things that is going to go down as, like, just a product of Eve getting older and growing up, and probably will never be able to be recreated again because the game has changed. So it's a shame, but it's cool to have something to look back on, and it's cool to see Pandemic Legion doing what they're doing. A more interesting poll, sort of. We asked, where should Plex prices be? This was in response to the massive spike in Plex and the recent bubble burst. Higher is better or lower is better, an even 50%, 12 votes apiece. I find this very interesting because you really can see both sides of it. On the one side, the lower Plex price, it makes the game a little more accessible to people because they can pay with ISK instead of having to pay out of their pocket. But on the other hand, maybe that's not such a good thing, and maybe people want to be selling Plexes to make ISK money.
Well, I think one thing that you've started to see lately, though, is people, they just have tons and tons and tons of alts. So, you know, and a lot of people, you know, if you've got like 5 or 6, 7 accounts, you know, you're only going to pay so many with cash if you are somebody who pays with cash. So, you know, once you start adding on those extra accounts, then you start using Plex for that. So I think that's why I don't think Plex prices will ever get down to where they used to be, even with CCP intervention.
Yeah, I'm inclined to agree. Although, you never know. Maybe as the economy gets a little better for people and they're, you know, they have a little more disposable income, maybe they're not going to want to have to grind for Plexus constantly. Maybe we'll start to see a shift there.
Yeah. It's just one of the way I feel about the Plex market is it's one of those things where unless you actually get numbers from CCP, which they'll never, you know, announce, you know, any sort of conversation that you have on Plex prices and, you know, why they're where they are is just going to be a lot of speculation. The variables or whatever that, you know, you can't really quantify in a meaningful way up to a certain point, but just without raw numbers from CCP.
Which I do have.
There's only so much
say,
you can do.
But can't really talk about.
Well, aren't you the cool kid then?
Yup. Just wanted to throw that out there to make you feel bad, Pinky. Did it work?
Yeah.
Make you feel small?
Yeah, but I already felt bad for other reasons beforehand. Mostly because I'm bad at Eve.
That's alright, so. I'll take it.
We all are, dude. We all are.
Alright, I'd like to give a shout out to our sponsor, Eve Timecode. Buy 14 Eve Timecodes, get one free. Eve Timecode where your business counts. Right now, they've got a coupon code FALLFUN2012. Gives you a 5% discount on purchases over $64. If you want to cash in on these plexes while they're still kind of high, that'd be the place to do it. If you would like to advertise on Declarations of War, you can sponsor us by contacting Alexiv Card either through our website, through Eve, or through our forums at www.normarx.com. We'd be happy to have your third-party site, your corp, your service. If you've got a business you'd like to promote, we are happy to do it for you on Declarations of War. Now, Pink, what have you been up to since episode 22, your last appearance on this glorious podcast?
Well, as you know, I flew with you guys for a little bit. Decided to kind of go back to my roots after a while. I missed it too much. And, you know, a lot of people that I were flying with, I was flying with at the time, they started doing the whole freight club thing. So, you know, I'd wanted to get in on that. So, you know, I flew with Freight Club for a little bit, a few months, and then the Inferno changes were announced, and Faction Warfare looked like a really cool feature that they're, you know, finally getting around to iterating on. So I guess since then, just been doing the Faction Warfare thing. We originally started for the Amar somewhere, you know, 2 or 3 months after that. We switched to Kaldari, but that lasted, I mean, maybe I want to say like 3 weeks, and then we all came back down to the Amar war zone just because we missed all of our friends there. So just been pew-pewing ever since.
And you've been losing to the Mimitar ever since. Confirmed and I?
We've been losing in terms of war zone control, but war zone control and PvP prowess and the fights you have are two totally different things.
The PvP you actually take versus who has the systems, those have seemed in the past to be in complete disconnect.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, if you fight over a staging system, there's usually intense fighting, but the current PV or the current Warzone control mechanics with Faction Warfare are completely PvE based. So, you know, what you can bring in terms of PvP numbers really mean nothing at all in terms of how successful you are in Warzone control. It just comes down to raw numbers on how many people you have that are willing to, you know, orbit a button for, you know, 10 to 20 minutes.
Have you been making any more videos?
Oh, I made a few. I made a YOLO Cola video when we switched to Kaldari. It was just, you know, a fun thing that I did because, you know, I like making videos. And as you guys saw with the Noirion call thing, and, you know, the YOLO Cola videos then, you know, turned into a troll where we were joining, you know, IRC up in Cobalt Reach. And that was a lot of fun. And then after that, I made a Vileraat memorial video for some of my friends in the CFC.
I still get compliments on Norian Cole. People say it's one of the funniest things I've ever seen.
It's a lot of fun to make. It took a lot of time, but it was worth it.
It was brilliant being on that op and doing the comms for it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it was fun.
Oh, man. List of contracts. Speaking of, it's time for the contract wrap-up. We had a contract in Uleta, which is Galenti Faction Warfare Space, Galenti Kaldari. It was pretty friendly Galenti while we were there, although there were a couple Plexalts in the area doing the whole grinding the contested system thing. But not actually intending to take it, which is pretty lame, and I'm glad they're fixing it, which we'll talk about later. But it was a pretty nasty contract. It was a low-sec piracy contract, which meant a lot of sec hits. And overall, I think we did pretty well. We started off in the week doing fine, and then one of our Noir Academy guys was in a place he wasn't supposed to be, with a ship he wasn't supposed to be in, when he wasn't supposed to be there, and during one of our court meetings. And, you know, we all sort of rushed out to save him when he claimed that he had tackled a Proteus. And you're like, oh yeah, Proteus kill. But it came really obvious that the Proteus had tackled him, and he didn't really communicate that very well. So when we landed, there were a whole bunch of ships waiting for us, and we lost a couple packs and guardians to that.
Oh no.
Yeah, that put us in a pretty big hole. We had to sort of grind our way back out of it. Much thanks to our friends in Rise of Legion. They were members of our Broco. And they weren't doing anything, and we just saved one of their towers recently, so they came out to help us. And we ground offline towers, we reinforced a faction tower, we hit some POCOs. Like, just doing anything and everything we can to force as many fights and get as many high-priced structure kills as we could to try to get the numbers back up.
We did. We finished with, what, like, just under 87%, I think?
Just under 72%, but it was over 4 billion in damage, which is pretty nice. A couple highlights. We had a really cool sniper fight versus these Germans that live in the area. Like, we reinforced their POCO, and they brought in Alpha Volley Union as blues. And they had pretty much like double our numbers. So we couldn't really hit the POCO itself, but I had my alt in the area, you know, just looking them over. And for some reason, there was an Oracle. It was like 30 or 40 kilometers away from everything else. And we were all in sniper ships too, like pulse Oracles, basically. And I was like, huh. Alright, let's try this. So I brought us in at a range that we could hit the Oracle, but their tornadoes and stuff couldn't really hit us, and we popped them before their scimitars could stop repping the POCO and started repping him. Pretty nice clean kill, worked right off, felt good. We also had a cool battlecruiser versus battlecruiser fight with relatively even numbers on a low sec gate, but I think we had the intelligence advantage. In that we knew what they had, and they weren't really... they knew we had a couple dudes, but I don't think they really knew the full extent of our fleet, so when we all jumped in, I think they kind of panicked, and that worked in our favor.
I love it when they panic.
That does make it easier. Overall, pretty messy, bloody contract all around. We had to spend some time afterwards getting our security statuses back, because most of the corp could not re-enter HiSec at that point.
Messy and bloody, two words I would not use to describe the next one.
Yeah.
I'll say, hey, messy and bloody just means you're getting good fights though, right?
Well, in this case it was mostly ganks, unfortunately. Like, we had the two or three good fights. Which I guess is, you know, it's pretty good for a contract, given our normal, like, guys just dock up or lob us out, and there's no real in between. But still could have, you know, it would have been nicer to have a little bit more. What are you gonna do? There's only so much you can do in a week.
Yeah, definitely.
So the other one that we had was Dark Taboo and Dravalamas. This was a war deck contract. Went for 2 weeks. And started out really promising, I gotta say. We had Xavier Sasquatch, who was one of our newer FCs. We're a longtime player, just starting to FC more. Took out a shield fleet. Just looking around for targets, first day of the war, kind of get a feel for where they're at, what they're going to come out in. Went down to ESA, where their PvPers were based, which is right near Providence. Went in, we got a Brutix kill. Then they undocked. So we went into ESA and then one jump pass toward Providence, which now put their headquarters system between us and Amar. As soon as we killed the Brutix, they started getting a lot of log-ons and started undocking in heavier ships. Warped to the gate. It looked like a fleet that we could fight. The numbers were more or less even. They had heavier ships, we had some frigates, but we were willing to take it. And then, just as they jumped their bait in, and we engaged it, two extra scimitars, bringing their total to three, landed behind their fleet and jumped. That was like soul crushing, because they had triple our logi, and we did not have anywhere close the DPS we needed to cut through it. So like, my rapier was there, I got caught by a Tengu that decloaked right next to me, they held me for a while, and then when it was my turn, they just alphaed right through my ASB tank, like it wasn't even there. We lost that fight. I took over FCing, I wanted another shot at him. You know, Xavier was pretty upset, but it wasn't really his fault. We reshipped us to armor. It's like, okay, they're going like all Mimitar for the most part, like all Mimitar Logi, all Mimitar damage dealers for the most part. I fitted us up with a armor hack type fleet with four Zealots as our main damage dealers and one Deimos, I think it was. Four Guardians, my ECM Tengu, which I completely refit to Mimitar Jammers, and a bunch of Tackle Frigs. Went in there, sadly, nothing. None of them would undock. They're like, damn. We waited maybe a half hour, and I was like, well, the last time they only undocked after we came through and went toward Providence. Maybe let's try that again. And, you know, I looked at the map, and there was another target spotted in low-sec space on the other side of Pravi. So I figured we could go in and just, like, roam through Providence if they didn't follow and go check out this other war target. As soon as we get past YMP, they started coming out. Bunch of Hurricanes, bunch of Tempests, three Scimitars, and with a fourth Scimitar following behind them. Pretty much even numbers. I think we had one extra guy, but they had one frigate, whereas we had four or five frigates. And as soon as we noticed them, called everybody to stop, put us all in the gate, just wait. They jumped a scout in, and without hesitation, jumped the rest of their fleet in. Said it was on and local, and it was definitely on. We have a video, which Turtle will be putting in the show notes. And, yeah, it was good. The first thing I did was jump all our frigates to the other side, which I think disoriented them a little bit. They didn't really call good targets after that. And I withheld our damage from the first two or three things they decloaked, which is like a Slefner, a Scimitar, and something else, and focused on the Hurricanes only. And our Zealots, with the EM damage coming off the lasers, cut through them like butter. My Tengu was keeping the Scimitars at least 50% jammed, and the fight was over pretty quick. Pretty much just as the fight was ending, our Guardians started having problems with Capacitor and ECM drones, so it was good timing for us, but Logi was holding pretty well on our side, and they just couldn't keep the ships up. They were just dying too fast. Even the battleships weren't able to sustain the damage because their Logi just kept getting jammed out. And we never got a fight out of them after that. Unfortunately. I'd heard reports of them undocking fleets when we weren't really around, in terms of numbers. Anytime we came in with a fleet looking for a fight, they stayed docked. Or, you know, they would undock and hang on the undock and not come off it, that kind of thing. And that was pretty much it. We got a handful of ganks, and we tried to force a fight by hitting their low-sec tower, which was a faction Galenti, so that would be the Shadow Serpentis Large. They had two towers in the same area. We hit the one, declawed all the guns, Mimitar faction warfare came in and forced us off. Tried to go back for it again, didn't have the numbers to finish it. Tried for a third time, and this time we went for the gusto and hit the faction tower. And, oh my god, it was the longest op I've been on in quite a while. Easily IFC'd for 8 hours, a bomber fleet with a few oracles trying to reinforce this thing. And before that, there was at least 3 or 4 hours of somebody else doing it. And required a finish up op for another at least an hour, probably more. And then we had the kill op. It was a huge to-do. The thing came out a couple hours before downtime. Like maybe 2 hours before downtime. So we actually had to wait for downtime to be over and then log everybody back on to finish it. We even one-cycled dreadnoughts on this thing. It was just such a dick star. But it finally died!
The whole idea was if we broke, 5 bill a week in damage dealt, you know, we would get a bonus to our contract pay. And I think we had well over a bill within the first 48 hours, I think, or the first 48 hours of that contract. So it was
hell,
really...
24 hours.
Oh, okay. Yeah, it was really promising. But yeah, after that, they stopped coming out.
Now, I had been tipped off that they were talking to Zerg Overmind of Deck Shield to try to, you know, pass the war deck off to Deck Shield. However, they didn't pull the trigger until after we killed the large tower, which I can't explain. So, they lost their most valuable alliance asset, and then decided to get out of the war deck. with less than a day to go. No idea, but now we're in a perma-war with Deckshield, apparently. We went around hunting them for a little bit, didn't really see much of them. And now we are out in Impasse, which we'll be talking about on the next podcast. And probably after that, we'll spend a little time getting to know Deckshield a little better.
Feature working as intended?
Yeah. <or less. laughs> This is one of those things that we told CCP about during the summit, CSM summit, and they still haven't gotten around to fixing. We're really pushing them hard to try to get War Deck fixes in for Retribution. It still may not happen for Retribution proper, but we're hoping one of the follow-up patches. It's something the CSM has been really active on, particularly me, Hans, and Keldon Ravan. And it's just a matter of, you know, getting CCP to live up to their commitments at this point. They've been made aware of the problem. They've acknowledged the problem. For the most part, there's large agreement on the solutions to the problem. It's getting them to actually do it now. And, you know, we'll see. This week in Mercs, several new units have been advertised on Crime and Punishment, including Suddenly Spaceships, now saying they'll take mercenary contracts. However, none of these groups have been listed on the Merc contracts listing, which means be wary if you are contacting them. They could be scam outfits. You don't know. Suddenly Spaceships is a really good PvP record. They're definitely very capable fighters. I don't know anything about them as far as their business side. So, if you are a new mercenary unit, I encourage you to get listed in Merc Contracts, which is a scam-free zone. And if you're serious about being a Merc, that is the place to be. And if you're not serious about being a Merc, maybe people shouldn't be giving you money. The Condemned and Convicted have returned to active status. It's a very small mercenary corp, did Empire contracts and stuff. They've now moved out to LoSec. They're still small, but if you want to contact them, contact Black Camper, all one word. And maybe you'll get a good rate out of them. I have no idea. But they are probably for like very surgical low-sec operations where you're only after a small group or a handful of guys. They might be the tool that you need.
Nor Academy is now recruiting. We are looking for smart players who are looking to learn small gang PvP in an immersive training environment. In a program designed for new pilots as well as grizzled 00 vets, learn the ins and outs of Merc life, including efficiency and ethics, hostile NullSec survival skills, FCing, and more. As one of EVE's oldest and most respected mercenary outfits, Noor runs a tight ship, but we always strive to have fun doing it. If you want to be part of a high-end Merc PvP organization that always strives to be better tomorrow than it is today, Noor is the place for you. And Noor Academy is the place to start. Apply today through our forums at noormercs.com.
Transitioning into EVE News. EVE News 24. They have revamped their site.
Quote unquote.
Yes. Very interesting choices. They pretty much copied a site called Verge.com or TheVerge.com. And by pretty much, I kind of mean exactly.
Well, it's, you know, it's the, and this is the nice thing about how we have two different EVE News whatever sites now, you know, and the fact that, you know, both sites should, you know, technically push each other to achieve higher quality, you know, now that there's some actual competition. But the new facelift is bad, and they should feel bad.
That would imply EVE News 24 is actually competition for Mitani.com.
EN24 is just like the same SoundClouds, and like how many times you want to listen to AAA on a SoundCloud?
Well, if it's McCauley raging tons, but for me the draw to Mitani.com is the articles are actually in depth and interesting. It's not just cut and pasted battle reports. It's not just here's a cool YouTube video. Although sometimes watching the YouTube videos are fun. But most of the time they're not, because it's the same old like O Fortuna knockoff Latin choral music with AAA or somebody own zoning something. Except everything is like so zoomed out you can't really tell what's going on or what the pilot ship even is. There's no text, there's no voice explanations of what's going on. It's just a whole bunch of graphics.
Or just like reposted blog rolls.
Yeah. By not always the best bloggers. Razmatani.com, you know, you can actually tell that they're investing the resources to get good writers, and they have, like, publishing standards for articles. So when you see an article on Matani.com, as long as it's a subject matter I'm interested in, I'm much more likely to read it rather than pass it off as, I don't need to read this, I probably already know it, or I'll just look at it for the video, see if it's worth watching, and then close it off, which is pretty much where I was with Evenage 24.
There's really a lot more, and it's cool to just kind of have that, like a feed almost for shit that we would be interested in as pod pilots, you know, and it has a lot to do with Eve, and it's a good forum for people, but, you know, it kind of goes outside that box.
Full disclosure, I did just get hired by Matani.com to write for their League of Legends desk, so.
That is a good disclosure to know.
Yes.
Fucking insider.
But, you know, I had written for Evenings 24 before as well. Not, like, regularly, but I would send them articles and tips and stuff. And it was good. But Matani.com just, like, this is how you do a better Evenings site. And it clearly is. In every conceivable way, except that some of the commenters are in the goon bubble. Which I guess is sort of unavoidable given the audience.
It's like a Reader's Digest, isn't it? Like a Reader's Digest of EVE Online, where it, you know, it encompasses things that, you know, appeal to the community as a whole rather than just EVE.
AAA has announced a restructuring of their alliance and their FCs and their doctrines, and they apparently are going to recommit to helping their allies Red Overlord and Solar Fleet. I don't know. Seems like something that was long overdue, but since they're losing catch now and have redeployed out of 00 entirely, I think they're in Orvol now, or maybe half the alliance is in Orvol and half is helping Solar Fleet over in the east. I don't know if it's gonna be. Well, here's the thing when talking about AAA, you know, oh, it's too little too late, or is it gonna be enough? Enough what? They're not going to be disbanding anytime soon. They're one of EVE's oldest and most cohesive alliances. AAA itself is not going anywhere. So, you know, whether they lose their space or not, that's not going to affect it. Whether they lose their allies or not, I don't really see that affecting them either. So, I don't know if there's a whole lot to talk about except that they're a big alliance in a big war zone, and they're doing things.
Yeah, I mean, I've been out of NullSec for a while, so I might not be the best person to comment, but, you know, any sort of restructuring that AAA can do now, regardless of what they actually do, is going to be a positive step. I mean, just like you said, Alec, AAA is like one of the oldest, you know, alliances that's still together in the game. So, you know, occasionally, it doesn't matter who you are, you need to take a step back, you know, and reevaluate. So, you know, it's something that's needed to happen for a while, and I guess, you know, in terms of how effective it'll be, we'll only see, you know, once the dust is cleared.
I find it interesting because I think AAA has been kind of whipped down to the point where they don't really care about their space all that much. They'll defend it to get the kills because of their, I don't know what the word is, maybe affectations for killboard stats. I don't know how to put it nicely because there's a lot of bullshit that goes on there, but you know, the smaller entities that are kind of shattering off from this, you know, people that used to be AAA's allies and stuff, they still want good fights. They're smaller entities. I think they're going to find it easier to move around, operate, find PvP as those smaller entities rather than as somebody that's kind of teamed up with AAA. I just don't think AAA is going to be good for anybody right now, like a toxic ex.
Well, here's the thing with AAA. I don't think they ever cared about their space necessarily. I mean, you know, general membership thought they did. You know, America, U.S. time zone, you know, FC leadership, they're like, oh, we don't care. We only care about for fights. But I think that historically there was kind of like this feeling of, you know, they had space and if it got them fights, cool. Which you saw, you know, every time they, you know, get knocked out of their space and go to catch. But you still have a very old kind of old guard Russian element leadership where there's just like, for them, they kind of do care about space to some degree, and the fact that, you know, it's how they make their income. And I don't, I'm not even necessarily talking about RMT, but just, you know, I feel like there's kind of been a disconnect with AAA in the whole goals of the Russian leadership and the Russians within the alliance and the goals within the U.S. Time zone and the U.S. leadership within the alliance, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, it makes total sense. And that's just the thing, isn't it, is that in the end of it, AAA doesn't really care about that space. But that's not, like, a good enough excuse for allies to hold on. I mean, there's going to be smaller people that do care about this space because it's not just such, like, a blasé thing to own a 0-0 region. You know, they want the space because they want the fights. They want everything that comes with sovereignty, quote-unquote. And, you know, just AAA ain't good for anybody that in that way.
I think they do care about the space, but it's in a different way than a lot of other alliances. I think they believe, like, Catch is theirs almost by birthright. In other words, that the natural state of things is for them to have sovereignty there. And any kind of disruption in that might happen, but will never last. Like this feeling of inevitability that even if these coalitions will come and sweep them time and time again, you know, they will always come back and retake it, and it'll always be theirs, no matter who's actually living there. They're just sort of temporary guests waiting for them to get kicked out, and AAA can enjoy those fights. And I don't know, in some ways that's a very healthy attitude, because, you know, they don't really get caught up in the highs and lows of sovereignty warfare and coalition building and all that stuff. But it can definitely be tough for your small allies, or even your medium allies, who don't really share that mentality, don't really share that attachment, and don't really share the, I guess, the spoils of when you come retake that space. And it can be hard for them to find a reason to stick with you through all that. For all the goon swarms, you know, goons for goons kind of mentality, they do take care of the allies pretty well. They provide them with reasons for fighting and rewards for fighting.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think a good comparison would be like PL, you know, and I'm not talking about PvP ability at all, or what they do, but just, you know, PL, when they lost their space, there was a very fundamental change, you know, in their attitude. And then when they lost their space, they're just like, fuck it, we don't need Sov at all. You know, and you saw a time when they were mercenary for a while, but eventually, you know, they hit a point where it's just like, okay, well, even though, you know, we don't have space, if we're going to be in NullSec, we need friends. Because the whole mercenary thing, you know, might not necessarily work out long term. And just the natural progression of Eve is to just make friends with people and, you know, find people you want to fly with. So I feel like with, you know, AAA, you know, they started down that path, but, you know, they never fully detached themselves from Sov.
Yeah, and they probably never will. I mean, to be honest. And who knows? They might be quite right. You know, whoever the Honey Badger Coalition winds up installing and catching those areas down there. Maybe in another 6 months, AAA will be kicking them out the door. And then they'll keep Catch for another year. Who knows? Speaking of coalition reorganization, this is a reorganization of a rather involuntary nature. Dot Bros, who had been probably the most successful anti-goon coalition in recent memory, certainly since Bob, they are now not really a thing anymore. They might claim to be a thing, but from where I'm standing, they're not a thing. There was a big leadership kerfuffle between NCDOT and Black Legion involving the co-executors of NCDOT splitting up, and then one of them going to Black Legion. They reset one another. There's a little bit of bad blood now. Nelly Secunda and 401k and a bunch of other groups are sort of in the middle. But for the most part, that was the split, like separating the most powerful military arm from probably with a stronger FC arm and the secondary most powerful group. Or maybe even third, I guess Nully is pretty big. But it was such a significant coalition member, Black Legion was, that without their leadership, without their numbers, and without their strength in a particular time zone, they just didn't have it anymore. And now CFC has claimed tribute pretty much entirely and will be rolling into Vale probably any day now if they haven't begun to start already.
For the Tech Moons.
Mm-hmm.
We still haven't gotten ours. I don't know what the fuck is up with that.
Someday.
I'll get a Tuckman when you get onto the CSM.
Yeah, right? Where's my gift bag? Should come with a little tech and a Titan.
Some nice soaps.
Yeah, like a lavender. Something classy.
Bitches love lavender.
Oh, this is really unfortunate. I really like the whole concept of Dot Brothers. Just their ability to fight outnumbered against Goonswarm and hold up their war machine for so long. It was really cool. I wanted that coalition to work out so much, but
Coalitions are way hip, especially ones that have brother or some variation of that word in the name.
I see what you did there. More coalition warfare. Gypsy Band has formed, I guess, like version 2.0 of their old Curse Coalition, and have gone down south and begun to invade Solar Fleet in the Innsmother region and surrounding regions. And I don't know too much about the fighting down there, but given who's involved, Gypsy Band, Coalition that they brought up from Curse, Solar Fleet, occasionally Honey Badger Coalition, occasionally Nulli Secunda, it's gotta be pretty hot. I predict dead supers pretty soon. Now, what do you make of the reasoning for this war? As far as I know, Gypsy Band is sort of harping on Solar in particular because they don't like their, I guess, EVE extracurricular activities in terms of renting, RMT, botting, etc., and they have singled them out for that reason.
It's kind of hard, well, for me anyways, it's kind of hard to make sense of it all because everybody's, like, in such limbo now, especially with the Dot Brothers coalition falling apart. Like, really the only two coalitions you can really count on now are, like, the CFC and the HBC, and everybody else just kinds to be in this, like, wash of not really knowing what to do against, like, an imminent threat. I don't really know how to describe it.
I don't know. I think it's EVE conflict at its finest. I mean, the best conflicts and the best wars where people actually give two shits, and it's not just some, you know, this silly proxy war or this, hey, let's board, let's create an artificial war like Delve 2012 is conflicts that start from just, you know, man, fuck those guys, or, you know, social reasons. Like, those are the best. I mean, like, the fucking mate wars with, who is that, NC and RVB or whatever, and then, you know, like you were saying now with this most recent war with, you know, it's because, oh, we don't agree with, you know, you're out of game activities. I don't know.
But I don't know. Maybe we could get somebody from Gypsy or Solar, if there's an English speaker that happens to listen to this, maybe they could fill us in. But my read on it is, because Solar was blue to Gypsy Band not too long ago, and Gypsy Band had sided with them in a conflict against other drone region groups, I don't know if it's a case of, we just did it at the time because it was politically expedient, we really still don't like them, or we're super bored and we need a reason. Well, let's just reuse the one from the last group that we fucked with. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, if it's an artificial reason, then that makes me sad, but
I think we are starting to see that, though, the element of, like, the fuck you reason. You know, whereas opposed, it was just kind of like the coalition goal to just keep everybody in line. Like, I think we're starting to see shards now that are, you know, have a distaste for other people, and hopefully that plays into some larger conflict that, you know, envelops.
Well, that's always been the reason any fights have really happened in Null, though. I mean, it's just kind of cyclic, where, you know, people become friends, and then it's like, no, they don't like each other anymore. I mean, because, you know, there's no real resources or anything as far as direct game conflict drivers. You know, sure, there's stuff to fight over, but that's not the reason why people fight, if that makes any sense.
See, I disagree. Like, I don't think if you went up to the average CFC guy that wasn't, like, a Tweetfleet troll or something of that level and say, you know, hey, are you fighting AAA or whoever because you don't like them, or that's the coalition goal? I think 9 out of 10 guys are going to say it's the coalition goal. They probably personally don't have any, like, massive distaste for these guys. Whereas opposed to, you start looking at, like, Gypsy Band versus Solar and all the shards coming off of the old Dot Brothers coalition, like, there was a lot of drama there and a lot of bullshit that had nothing to do with any sort of coalition goals, and I think that's going to be why those guys are fighting.
if you think about this, as far as like what's next after this, okay, look up the Varite influence map. Now picture up north, Rolling Thunder gone, Northern Coalition gone, at least, possibly Brick Squad, who knows. And replace all that with Goonswarm or Goonswarm related guys. Now scroll down to the bottom, replace all that AAA Green, AAA Citizens, Coven, Inverbrass, Stain Empire, Red Overlord, replace all that with test controlled shit. Probably gonna be replacing that like buffer region in between AAA and Solar with Nelly Secunda, Gypsy Band, and who knows whoever. Then you got Solar proper, and then there's the whole clusterfuck of essentially drone region renters, which, as cool as Intrepid Crossing is, and as cool as Ethereal Dawn is, they don't have the military integrity, and they've never really been forced to have the military integrity, at least not in the past year, year and a half, to have to stand on their own. So, what's after that? Do we see Goonswarm pushing into the drone regions? I doubt it, since there's nothing really there for them. Do you see HBC pushing up into, like, in some other cache? I don't know. Like, these seem to be things that you'd have to manufacture a reason for. Because as far as I know, neither group has any big problem with Solar Fleet. And I love Gypsy Band, I think they're great. And they're probably awesome. One of the most awesome small gang warfare guys that regularly plays with the 00 big guys. But I just don't see them with the kind of coalition level fighting and grinding ability that would allow them to completely displace Solar Fleet from all those regions they hold. It's like 4 or 5 regions. Any reasonable time frame.
Sorry. Yeah, that was always my question is, what are, like, goons? And I'm not even worried so much about Honey Badgers because they have, like, in the natural course of their alliance and coalition, I think they have time to develop themselves in the way that the CFC already has. Like, CFC, I feel like, is at the point where if they don't have a war or, like, something to fight against, like, I don't know what they're gonna do. You can really only do so much, like, high-sec interdiction, stuff like that. If you don't have a target to give this overwhelming force, you know, what are you gonna do?
I think there's a couple of interesting things they could do in Empire, but I sort of agree that the novelty would wear off pretty quick.
Well, yeah, and it doesn't, you know, encompass a lot of those people, I think. I don't think there's a lot of, you know, an overwhelming majority of those people that would say, yeah, cool, let's just spend the rest of our time in EVE, like, high-sec ganking or something, you know. Like, Ministry of Love and, like, all that shit, I feel like that has always been, like, a real specialized group of, you know, people and goons that want to do that, and it caters to their needs, but it doesn't really cater to the survival of the Alliance or Coalition as a whole.
Interesting times ahead. Speaking of interdictions, goons have once again moved to interdict Alinti Ice. So that's going to be a thing. if you're a Moon Miner, if you're a Nyx pilot, if you're a Thanatos pilot, stock up now, because it's only going to get worse.
We had seen a pretty good drop in fuel block prices, you know, since, what was it, the rigs came out for the barges, and then you had the barge changes in general. But, I mean, fuel blocks had dropped a pretty considerable amount, maybe like 10-15%, something in there. So I guess they have room to go up, but I guess, you know, there's no fundamental changes. I mean, you have the interdiction actions, which are going to screw up the supply end of the supply and demand, but I mean, it's not like you're changing game mechanics or anything. I don't think it's going to be any sort of long-term shuffle to the price.
Yeah, well, I mean, the ice interdiction never really was any sort of long-term shuffle in terms of price. What the interesting thing about this one is, in terms of change to, you know, game mechanics, is the mining barges, the Mackinac changes. So it'll be interesting to see how they help kind of outpace this, you know, ice interdiction, or if I'm totally derping what I'm trying to say right now, but it's a lot easier to mine ice than it was, so it'll be interesting to see.
Also gonna be interesting to see how effective these suicide ganking attacks are with the new mining barge buff hit pointy thing.
From what I've read, it's fairly successful. Goonswarm has accounted for it and planned for it and has already ganked, what, like 20-some orcas, I think, from it. Like, they know what they have to do. It's just, it's not a thing where one person in a destroyer can go solo a barge anymore. Like, you're going to need two or three people. So I don't think it's going to be as, I don't know if it was ever profitable per se, but it's definitely going to be harder to fund financially now because you're going to need more guys. I mean, that's just the way it is.
Well, Goonswarm certainly has no shortage of guys. It's never been their problem. Speaking of CFC, there's been a little drama in Space Monkeys Alliance. Now, normally we wouldn't cover something like this because it's sort of small scale. I mean, it's just a corp leaving an alliance. And didn't really cause them to disrupt Sov, didn't really impact the major war or anything like that. But there is this recording of why they were kicked, and it reads like the Declaration of Independence, like listing all the grievances against the English Empire. It is pretty freaking incredible. So we're going to include that link for you, and definitely check it out. It's, special. I frankly don't know how this corp hung around as long in the alliance as it did with all that stuff going on. Like, plotting coups out in the open, deliberately spreading misinformation about what the alliance was doing and what the, like, ship replacement programs were, just so they could stir up more shit. And it's like, wow.
Yeah.
These are things?
If you could imagine things that, like, you would have been cut in, like, quarters and, like, shipped to different corners of the country for, like, 400 years ago, this would have been, like, that list of things. Like, just sedition and plotting against your government, just ridiculous lists. I mean, I guess it was all real, but fuck, dude, just kick them out already.
Yep. And Turtle, you want to talk about the last story before we get into Fat Core?
Yeah, there was, like, a 200-bill Atron blown up, unfit. This dude apparently thought it would be a good idea to ship a bunch of, probably, like, every blueprint you could ever imagine. It's, like, too long to even make up a list to read. It was just an insane number. In an unfit Atron through, I think he got blown up in Nullsec, didn't he? I double-checked the mail. Over 200-bill worth of blueprints, so. Don't be a fucking idiot. Fit your ship.
And you can check out declarationsofwar.com. Scroll down, it'll be the second story after you hear this podcast. You can check out our comic strip, immortalizing this idiot.
Yeah, it even inspired a comic strip, so just to tell you how good it is.
Speaking of that strip, you will be seeing another one the week after this is posted. It's going to be a regular feature for us on the week in between us putting out podcast content. And we will be hoping for funny, not funny, thought-provoking. If neither of those things, you'll at least be able to be amused at how badly I'm failing at trying to be funny. And finally, CCP put out some faction warfare changes. These were originally slated to go live for Retribution, but due to pressure by the player base and the CSM, they were released early to try to stem the tide of faction warfare LP. Mostly tons of changes in how LP is earned, the way the plexes are working, and the way some of the upgrades are going. So, Pinky, since you are a resident faction warfare expert, why don't you take us through it, and take us through what's successful about them and what still needs to get done.
Oh my gosh. Like, I haven't talked about faction warfare from Aquarnix at all in the past few months. No, I'm just kidding. I don't know, a lot of the changes are good. There's a lot of positive changes. The issue is, with a lot of the changes, is that just the way CCP has been doing the whole iteration in small chunks thing, it gets a little wonky at times just because the order that things are released in sometimes, you know, plays a very big role in determining, you know, how successful or what the impact of certain changes are. So I think we're going to see, you know, when we've already kind of started to see some slowdown in terms of Warzone control. But it's going to be hard to quantify a lot of the changes just because, it's still incomplete. You know, like they made it to where rats, you know, you have to shoot all the rats to shut down the timer, but you still get a full rat spawn. So plexes are ran a lot slower now. The nerf in terms of income, that was something very positive that, you know, it it's really unfortunate that we couldn't have, you know, had that a lot sooner. But that's definitely a positive. I mean, that's one of those universal positive changes that everybody's happy with. But I don't know. I mean, I guess, like, honestly, now all we can do is wait until winter, see what we get with the rest of the changes. It's kind of, I don't know. Overall, like, it's kind of disappointing and unfortunate with Faction Warfare, I feel like. Just because I feel like a lot of the changes we have now are good, but they're just still kind of band-aids to a broken system, if that makes any sense. And we're at a point now where CCP's invested enough time laying the framework for the current Faction Warfare system that I don't think we'll get to see a lot of the changes that actually need to happen to have, you know, a healthy and exciting Faction Warfare that isn't just kind of some sort of niche feature, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense.
Yeah, certainly.
So, it's still a good place for fights, though. I mean, and it, you know, it's nice for additional targets and being able to fight without gate guns, though, in the meantime, so.
Do you see the changes to how easily LP are being acquired as potentially impacting the availability of fights, either through reducing Faction Warfare population or making it harder for those players to replace ships?
Yes. And, you know, this goes back to the whole conversation of, you know, wrong direction altogether. Just in the fact that, you know, I don't think that we'll see this immediately just because everybody who's in Faction Warfare now is just, like, mad rich, or at least they should be. If you're not, you totally did it wrong and you should feel bad, which I actually had a corpy of mine the other night. He was like, "You guys should feel proud of me. I didn't whore any LP." And then he asked for a ship because he didn't have any ISK, and we were just like, "Dude, are you kidding?" But no, I mean, long term, right now, people have a ton of ISK. Moving forward, you still run into the issue of, can both sides, you know, do the whole Faction Warfare solve mechanic, run plexes, and make enough ISK to, you know, lose ships to each other? Because, you know, it's all well and good that the winning side is able to run plexes and do missions to, you know, buy ships to throw up against at the other person, but in a two-sided conflict, you need, you know, some sort of parity to where the losing side can still do that. And under the current system, the rewards for the losing side are still very, very, very minor compared to the winning side. So I don't think that will really help a ton, and that still might be an issue moving forward. Basically, what a lot of people have been calling for is that Faction Warfare to be a somewhat self-contained system, in the fact that you can play Faction Warfare and fund the majority of your ships and your pew through Faction Warfare, which right now a lot of people on the losing side have to do it externally through other means. So I don't know. Sorry, I don't even remember the original question. Sorry, it's like hard to talk about Faction Warfare without like out turning into like a rant or whatever.
That's fine. I think you hit it. Okay, and a few words about our stakeholder project as we're moving into the CSM coverage. I wish I had more to say about this. Right now, I was hoping to have some details that I could go public with by the time this was being recorded. Unfortunately, I cannot go public with said information, but I guess the TLDR would be that the CSM is overall not happy with how the stakeholder project has gone. Not to say that we're unhappy with the feature of bounty hunting. That's actually coming along great. And in fact, the CSM has been able to apply a lot of positive influence on the designs of that feature. The issue is that, except for like right at the very beginning, it has pretty much felt like working on any other feature that CCP puts forward to us. And there wasn't much stakeholderiness to be done. We are definitely communicating with CCP about that, and we hope to refine the process in the future. And there are definite concrete plans to provide a full picture and story to the player base. As you know, relatively early. It's probably not going to happen until after the expansion comes out. But you know, what was done, not done, could have been done better, was done absolutely fantastic, and the stakeholder project will be relayed to the player base as soon as that's possible. Hopefully, the changes that we've applied to, or helped apply to bounty hunting, and war decks, hopefully, and kill rates, and all that sort of stuff, will be appreciated by the players, and we had a good time working with the team on those. Just, it didn't really feel like stakeholdering, and for all intents and purposes, aside from like the first month, 2 months of it going on, it pretty much wasn't.
Well, my question is that, you know, sure, you know, it's awesome that, you know, the CSM, they're, you know, helping CCP improve communication, and we're seeing a lot, you know, more player input in regards to the features we see, but in terms of, you know, kind of the status quo regarding CCP's, you know, willingness to, you know, listen to the CSM and, you know, change their mentality on projects, you know, and how they approach projects and just kind of the vision and the framework that they create for the game. Do you see any sort of like long-term potential for change in that regard though? Or is it just going to be like this constant ongoing battle that I feel like overall we lose more often than we win?
I'm going to have to say that a lot of the issues that I'm talking about don't even really have anything to do with the CSM itself. More like changes going on in CCP or CCP processes that did not translate as well as we'd hoped to the stakeholder process. And I think everybody involved knew that the first time around was going to be rough. I think the CCP is still pretty positive on the CSM in general. Certainly the teams that we engage with have good things to say about our feedback and the extra set of eyes and different perspective we bring to their development process. Certainly the players are going to notice some, and hopefully greatly appreciate some, positive aspects to features and ship balances and all that stuff that the CSM is partially responsible for. Obviously every change is made by CCP, but you know, we do push them in certain directions and push them away from other directions, and that has consequences. They're definitely listening to us at times. It's just this particular experiment was not the best case scenario. Far from the worst case scenario, and certainly CCP is still committed to the process going forward as far as we know.
Mm-hmm. Because, like, you know, one of the things that I guess is a common player concern, though, is, you know, like you mentioned, they're willing to listen to us at certain times, but, you know, on a lot of the changes, like, you don't even necessarily need CCP to listen to you all the time at all. That'd probably be detrimental, but I guess just my question overall is just, you know, do you feel like CCP is listening more on the times that it matters, I guess, if that makes any sense, or you'll at least have enough pull as the CSM to, you know, on certain key things, if CCP's like, yo, we want to do this, or it's a bad idea, that the CSM can swing its weight and just, you know, prevent any sort of terrible disasters?
It really depends on issue. Faction Warfare, they've been very receptive to the CSM's feedback and guidance on that. Same thing with ship balancing for the most part. But other features like war decks, we had big contentious fights with CCP over the war deck feature, particularly allies system, and, you know, not releasing it with certain exploits still in, that sort of thing. That, you know, eventually they just say, well, you know what, this is the way we want it, it's our game, and we're launching. So, and the direction and sort of the overall landscape balancing ecosystem kind of conversation about Empire, LoSec, 00, etc., particularly 00, Sov rebalance, that sort of stuff has more often than not fallen into the latter category. We've been trying to slowly but surely push them to think about these issues, but no, it's not easy. CCP is still very much in a thinking about the next expansion mindset, and they don't really like to be locked in to a development plan. Where they think about things 2, 3, 4 expansions ahead of time and plan out for that. Personally, I would rather they did have that kind of forethought and put that kind of planning in, but you know, that's, it does open some good doors if they're more spontaneous, like bounty hunting, or the team that was working on bounty hunting, which was originally not supposed to be working on just bounty hunting. They were supposed to be doing a whole bunch of other stuff too. But they wound up focusing on bounty hunting and really making that feature rich. And now it's actually looking pretty damn good. And a lot of players are getting excited about it. So, you know, who's to really say? I want to come down at CCP for how they run things. And would definitely like them to spend a little bit more forethought on expansions in the future and not always do like this mad dash a couple months beforehand to figure out what they're going to do next and then move on to the next
thing.
That's kind of
the sound of how it sounds, is like you and the CSM kind of hoped you were going to be a little bit deeper in the development cycle than you were actually. Correct me if I'm wrong.
That was the idea. And we were deeper in the development cycle than ever before. The issue is that there was no real follow-through on that. Like, we got to see meetings and provide feedback on those meetings and things that were discussed in them that previous CSMs would never have dreamed of doing. But aside from that initial sneak peek, essentially, we don't really feel that there was a lot of engagement with that team that would make our relationship with them any different than any other team or set of devs that we worked with.
Yeah, and that's kind of the impression that I get in terms of, you know, CCP is used for the CSM. It's kind of a tool for not, I don't want to say putting out fires, but I'll just use an example. Like, one of the key issues you continually see with CCP expansions where, you know, anything is the defining feature or defining impact that a feature has is its profitability and impact on the economy. It's just CCP doesn't seem to have any sort of framework on where they want certain income levels to be. So they'll release an expansion with, hey, this is, you know, this awesome new feature and you can make a ton of ISKing this, and this is why we want people to do it because we're offering this ISK reward. But it just, you know, it'll blow some other aspect of the game's, you know, profitability out of the water, and everybody will flock to it. Not necessarily because it's a good feature, but just because, you know, it's the most profitable thing to do. And then when they, you know, they have to spend all this time fixing it, it wreaks havoc on the economy, yada, yada, yada. But then moving forward, the feature that they added kind of just gets ignored or just goes back to irrelevance. Like you saw with incursions, and now you're seeing with faction warfare. And, you know, I don't know. I continually see, unless CCP changes kind of some of their process and lays down more framework on certain things, I feel like they're just going to keep having that same thing over and over again.
Yep. And now, moving on to our final segment. I pretty much agree with you, so I'm going to move on. hopefully we'll have more to say about that subject after the CSM meeting, which I believe is December? Yes. The second week of December, something like that. We're definitely going to be pushing them to include framework, probably as like a meeting into itself, to see if we can get them to do that. We'll see. We'll see if they'll even allow us to have that conversation. But hopefully we can get some positive movement in that. I think it'd be helpful for the game's direction for many of the reasons you just described. Our final segment, a masterclass segment on the Falcon. The Falcon is a mainstay recon ship. It's Tech 2 version of the Blackbird. And it's one of the most infamous Eve ships ever. There's an entire song devoted to because of Falcon. It has been through some nerfs, some buffs, some nerfs, some slightly less nerfs. And I guess Black Ops was a huge buff for the Falcon in general, so I guess I'll throw that in the buff category. And yeah, it's a thing. If you're an FC, you deal with Falcons all the time. If you're a soloer, you live in fear of the Falcon. Its role is pretty much to engage at range with ECM. It's widely regarded as the best of the ECM ships, although I personally think that title is much more up for dispute than many other people will give it credit for. It comes in three basic variants: the shield, the armor, and the Black Ops version. The shield variant is pretty self-explanatory. It's a shield tank. You're using the low slots for signal distortion amplifiers, which make your ECM hit harder from longer range. And you're using the long range that comes with being a recon ship to sort of sit at the edge of a fight and just jam things out. Now, the armor variant is not necessarily tougher. It removes the SDAs from the low slots and replaces them with things like a plate and stuff like that. So it has tank in the armor and leaves the mid slots completely free for ECM, allowing it to fit more ECM by almost 50% than the shield variant or most shield variants. That's a pretty significant jump, especially if you need to run like lots of different racial jammers because you don't know what you're expecting. Downside is, it's really slow. Like, really slow. It also has a huge explosive hull, which makes it vulnerable to Bouncer 2s, which can hit at its optimal range. And finally, its role in Black Ops. This can be either shield or armor, depending on what your fleet is running. But basically, you jump through the Black Ops portal, and instead of engaging at range like you normally would, you're pretty much engaging point blank, trying to jam out as much of the enemy fleet as possible to keep your hunter killer from getting into the pop.
I just want to say right now that if, you know, because I'm a Falcon pilot, and honestly, the main reason I fly it, you know, it's not even for the, like, oh, force multiplier, just the tiers in local are always fun. No, Falcons are actually really good solo boats. I don't think very many people use them to solo, but one thing, you know, that I like doing is, you know, flying around in my Falcon by myself, and then, you know, I'll just find fights and just pick whoever I want to jam, and I'll just jam one side out, and, you know, that's the way I solo in a Falcon, which, you know, it's a little different than, you know, what most people think in terms of solo, but it's very rewarding, I guess, if that makes sense.
That sounds more like kill whoring is what you just described.
See, but that's the thing. It's not just like I'm whoring on with one gun and I had no contribution. I mean, it literally is like, you know, you're deciding an entire fight. So, I mean, you had a very real impact on the fight. So I don't think it's exactly that as comparable to that. And it's also kind of fun in local too, because you can, you know, there's always the, I can't believe you guys brought a Falcon. And it's like, he's not with us. And they're like, yeah, whatever, you're lying. You have no honor. I don't know. It's good times.
Yeah, I like the Falcon in the close-up role, the Black Ops role. It's fun. I'm a Rapier pilot by blood. But I like that kind of up-close-ish and personalness to it. Just get all up in your face before you can't fucking lock anything anymore. Da-na-na-na.
It's pretty much a must for those Black Ops fleets. You know, you got bombers, which have no tanks. You got your hunter-killer, which is immobilized for 30 seconds and already taking fire. You need jams. You just need jams. There's no replacement for them.
Yeah. Well, and a lot of things too, when people, joking aside or whatever, when people complain about Falcons, and it's like, oh, you had to have it, I would have had you if it wasn't for your Falcon. Like, what a lot of people forget is, a lot of times in terms of baiting and setting traps, like, the Falcon is actually a key component, you know, and it's, you know, sure, you might have killed the dude if there wasn't a Falcon there, but at the same time, the guy wouldn't have chased after you if he didn't have the Falcon, if that makes any sense, so.
Now, versus the other ECM ships is an interesting question. It's the only one that can go through a Black Ops portal, so that's that. But for roaming fleets and stuff, it's got competition from the Blackbird, the Kitsune, and the Rook. Now, where do you guys stand in these different ships? The Blackbird, once it gets the buff in winter, is going to be a lot more competitive. Right now, I hate it. I think the Kitsune is, frankly, the best of the three, although the Rook is up there.
Personally, I think the Falcon, because the Falcon's unique role in being a Kovops cloak is probably the most important thing to me when it comes to actually flying an ECM boat, that element of surprise. Because like you said, and Pinky said, that nobody, when people see you have a Falcon, like, it is probably the greatest force multiplier of any of the ECM ships, and people do not want to fight you. So like, being able to hide your ECM and surprise people with it, make sure you're at the right ranges and shit like that. Like, that's a trade-off I'm not willing to make with any of the other boats. So, I mean, I gotta go Falcon.
Honestly, it depends on the situation. You know, and that's one of those total, like, no answers. But, you know, each ECM ship has a very different role, I guess, if you will. Like, you know, the Falcon, the ECM or the with the Falcon, the cloak is crucial, just because you can time when you want to decloak, you can watch the field. You know, you're not forced to engage when you don't want to, so you're able to, you know, get whatever position you want, and that in itself is invaluable. But it really just depends on the gang situation. I mean, the Falcon is great. The Falcon's probably the most multi-purpose, I would say. In moving fleets, it's kind of harder with Falcons, just because, you know, you're going to show up on the field late unless you just want to die, you know, if it's a roaming gang, because you have to bounce out, or, you know, you're not just going to, like, start jamming once you jump through, because, seriously, you'll just die. Same thing with the Blackbird. You know, Blackbird also kind of suffers from that, but it's got that great optimal range, and it's really cheap. You lose a Blackbird, you don't even care. So, I don't know, it's hard to say. And, you know, the Griffin and the Kitsune, they're awesome for roaming mobile gangs. People underestimate them, but it all comes down to the pilot. People, they look at ECM ships and they think, oh, you know, they're super easy to fly. They're just this, you know, cheap, cheesy game, you know, force multiplier, and it's unfair. But the reality is how effective ECM is in any sort of gang situation comes down to the pilot itself, and just a good ECM pilot understanding positioning, understanding the unique strengths and weaknesses of his ship, and also too understanding just positioning and just the role of the fleet. It plays a very big impact on, you know, their effectiveness.
There's definitely a certain level of required independence when you fly the Falcon. I hear what you're saying about the mobility thing, and I think that the Falcon's key mobility aspect is the fact that it can cloak. I mean, otherwise it is really just like a really expensive Blackbird, slow as shit, thin tank. Like, its mobility comes from the fact that it can cloak. But I definitely think there's a sense of required independence when you fly these ships, because from whatever I have seen with a Falcon in fleet, the Falcon is really the one ship that I will allow. If it's somebody I know that's good, I will allow them to call their own targets, because the Falcon has a different view than I do, and the Falcon has a different priorities than me. The Falcon is specifically there to jam out high DPS targets or break logi chains. And sometimes I don't see that trying to manage everything else. So, like, having a good Falcon pilot that can actually find their own targets is just so awesome, because they're really hard to micromanage because they're at a different range. And it's just one of those things where, like, you got to be independent.
Well, here's the thing, though. Like, with each individual ECM ship, you know, and I totally agree with you. That's a really good point. I think in the greater context, though, of each ECM ship, and let me know your thoughts, I feel like we haven't seen a very heavy ECM metagame evolve, or we haven't seen the ECM strategy and tactics of how people fly ECM evolve very much, just because it is kind of, quote-unquote, overpowered. So a lot of people are just kind of like, hey, just hit jams, and that works for, like, 99% of the situations. But when you look and you really break down each one of the ship's bonuses and what they do well, you notice a very real disconnect on how effectively they're flown and how many people actually fly them to their strengths, if that makes any sense. I mean, you know, and Alec, you're a EFT whore like myself, you know. It's just interesting when you look at the different cruisers, like, you know, the Blackbird, it's got an insane optimal range bonus. With Proteus Links, you can hit optimals out to 150, to where your lock range is, like, the only thing, you know, stopping you. You know, the Blackbird, or the Falcon, you know, it's got incredible lock range naturally, but, you know, your optimal kind of sucks. The Griffin and the Kitsune, the Griffin's got good lock range, but it doesn't have as many jammers, and the strength isn't as high, but it's really fast. Comparably, the Kitsune, you know, you get extra low slots, and, you know, it's got more jam strength, but the optimal and the lock range are bad enough to where you kind of lose fitting. So compared to the Griffin, it's just kind of like a more expensive Griffin with more strength, but the lock range on the Griffin is better. So I don't know.
I think that's probably going to be the case till electronic attack frigates come up for the tier side rebalance. Because, you know, with all the Tech 1 ships getting looked at, the Tech 2s have to get updated, but they're not going to get looked at till all the T1 stuff is done. But, you know, eventually you should see the Kitsune have a longer lock range than its Tech 1 counterpart. Like, mm-hmm. That would just make sense. Right now it doesn't, so it's sort of screwed up, and you'd almost rather have a... In fact, at this point, I probably would rather have a Griffin than have a Kitsune, just because you get so much out of the Griffin, and it's a fraction of the price.
No, yeah, like, actually, this is important. Nobody's mentioned this. There's actually a stealth ECM nerf in the works this winter. No, not many people have pointed this out or noticed it, but if you look at all of the cruisers that have been rebalanced by CCP Fozzy, they all get a pretty significant sensor strength buff.
I'm totally cool with that. Uh-huh. Tech 1 cruisers were way too easy to jam.
Yeah, so no longer will one jammer equal one jammed ship. There's definitely a chance to miss now. And with ECCM as well, you know, it's going to get a much higher multiplier since you have a higher base. So ECM pilots, beware.
All right, guys. This has been Declarations of War Podcast, Episode 37. Head to declarationsofwar.com to participate in the show calls, leave a comment, or give us a donation. This podcast is listener and community supported, so your donations, your recurring donations, your sponsorships, they're helping to pay for hosting, editing, and hopefully, you know, if we get enough support from people, we'll try to provide some cool things in the future, like maybe merch, definitely contests, things like that, but we can't do that without your help. You can reach Noir via our public channel, CafeNoir.com, and apply to join us at Noir Academy on our forums, www.noirmerch.com.
Shadows on the bits I used to hate.